This is Marshall Masters for Yowza.com, that's YOWUSA.com, and in the first part of this two-part interview, we're going to cut to the chase with Philip Gardner.
Suddenly, I opened my eyes, and I saw through the world's disguise, and then it occurred to know the difference between the lies and the truth.
Well, Yowza subscribers and listeners at large, have you wondered about disinformation and the impact it has on your life? You know, we all know about it. Well, you know, disinformation's like pornography. You know it when you see it. The question is what is it doing to us and what can we do about it? Well, that's the whole point of this two-part interview. Over the years, we've always had to deal with crackpots and cranks who send us these vulgar and flaming emails. And they show up on the radar scope like a little blip here and a little blip there, and they come and go like run-by fruiters, and that's just the way it is. But this year was different. This year we began documenting SPT disclosure videos. That's the South Pole Telescope. Particularly, you've heard of Nibiru Shock 2012, and, well, that got us into a whole new ballgame. And those little blips that were coming and going like run-by fruiters on the radar scope started turning into these huge mushroom clouds. And consequently, we saw a whole new pattern. What we were seeing are organized, well-funded, and very robust disinformation attacks, not by individuals or just a few folks working in concert, but these are teams, wolf pack teams, no differently than the German U-boats that used to prowl the Atlantic in wolf packs. And the U-boat skippers of that day used to call it the happy times. That was because they were sending Allied ships to the bottom at a prodigious rate, and England was literally almost on the brink of collapsing. And then things took a mojo turn. The Allies figured out how to deal with the wolf packs. And the interesting thing to note is that at the end of the war, when the final death tolls were tallied, the Nazi U-boat service, as a percentage of its force, sustained the greatest losses of any combat force of any nation during World War II. And so the same lesson holds true here. We as individuals can come together, and it doesn't take that many of us, and we can turn the tide. Right now, the wolf packs are running rampant. They're out there spewing disinformation, and they're preventing us from getting vital truth. Truth that's necessary for each and every one of us to exercise our God-given freedom of self-determination. You see, the whole point of disinformation is just simply not to confuse a few folks or to hide a few secrets. The real intention of disinformation is to subjugate us so that we can be enslaved. If that happens, it's not in our lifetime or just a few years. It's our lifetime plus the lifetimes of countless generations beyond us. And what will be the magic weapon, the real secret powerhouse of this takeover of our world, our planet, by these dark forces of disinformation? It'll be four simple words. I don't get involved. The more people that say it more often, the more likely it will be that they can enslave us. God forbid they win, because the only way they can is if we let them, and you find yourself with the yoke of slavery on your shoulders. Would you want to get up every morning, sweat like a dog, go to bed hungry at night, and in the back of your mind, your words are coming back to haunt you? I don't get involved. I don't get involved. And with that thought in mind, I'm going to tell you two truths. One is that there's always going to be a lot of people that are going to do exactly that. They are of a, you might say, a pre-enslavement mentality. They'll just let it happen. But what I am seeing is that there is a rising tide of people who are going, hell no. And in the words of our founding fathers, give me liberty or give me death. Well, here's the good news, folks. We can keep our liberty. We don't have to let them win. And stopping them from winning is a lot easier than what you would think. And I'm going to lay this all out for you. so that you are empowered, that you as an individual or working with a few friends can make a difference. And best of all, you can do it anonymously. All you need is an internet connection, a little bit of time, and an unshakable commitment to victory. I'm going to map all this out for you as we go through these next two interviews with Philip Gardner and Marshall Van Summers. As we do, you're going to see this from not only a terrestrial viewpoint, but even an extraterrestrial viewpoint. And as we get further into the interviews, you'll begin to see why both of these views empower you with an understanding of what is happening so that you can take concrete steps today to join in the anti-disinformation response. And what's the essence of that response? Well, that's simple, folks. You just got to stand up and say, "This is my planet too." And at the next break, I'm going to talk to you about what makes these disinformation operatives tick. And with that, let's get into it with Philip Gardner.
Get a job, pay your taxes, pay your dues. You can live any way that you want to as long as you don't break any of their rules.
This is Marshall, and I'm back on with Philip Gardner. Come back to the show. This time, we're going to start off by taking a look at The Extraordinary Voyages of Jules Verne. Phil, hey, good to have you back.
Thank you very much for having me back on.
Well, I definitely wanted to have you on because I really enjoyed your DVD. As a kid, grew up with, of course, 20 Leagues, Beneath the Sea, War of the Worlds. This was science fiction that really shaped my youth, and as it did for many people and still does. And so what I found fascinating with your DVD was how much Verne was influenced by secret societies.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it surprised me. I wasn't really going out to find anything about Verne other than to create a biography. But when you start delving, you can't avoid it, really, you know, to find that he was influenced by the various secret societies, which were really prolific in Paris and France at the time.
Which ones in particular now, just so for the listener so they can understand what they're going to see in the video?
Well, more particularly, it's the main one is Freemasonry. He was surrounded by Freemasons, basically because he was published by a man known as Herzl, and one of the biggest publishers in France at the time. And a lot of his other authors, such as Alexandre Dumas and George Sand, were Freemasons, big Freemasons.
Right.
But also we have in there Rosicrucians, because that was rather large at the time as well, and grew right up to the 1950s, and still around today in quite sizable amounts. But of course that was a branch of Freemasonry anyway, and started at the same time that Freemasonry's claim official birth. So they are linked intricately. They members are of both. You know, they both have, there's Rosicrucian degrees in Freemasonry.
Right.
Rosicrucianism has Freemasonry degrees, and it's intricately linked. It just appears separate on the outside, because it's more of a, Rosicrucianism is more of a spiritual or a psychological secret society than Freemasonry purports to be.
You know, in terms of being politically active, do you see a difference between Rosicrucians and with Freemasons?
Oh, for sure. If you look at the history of both of them, Rosicrucianism is really about the mind and about the science of nature, understanding nature itself through science, and therefore understanding ourselves better and our connection to what they call the divine. Freemasonry, on the other hand, is joined by a lot of people, even today, of course, people who think that they can get a good leg up in whatever realm they're in, whether it's politics, commerce, religion, whatever.
Right.
And the law. And that's true, unfortunately. That doesn't matter what club men, you know, get together in, they help each other out. And that's not always good. Sometimes it is, of course. It's not always good that you've got a secret or a society that is keeping secrets, that has, you know, policemen, lawyers, judges, politicians, commerce, all these people that, you know, shouldn't really be making decisions behind the scenes. So, yeah, they have a lot of politics. They have been implicated in so many revolutions that I said to somebody earlier, I'm having difficulty finding a revolution post-1700 that does not involve the Freemasons. So that tells you the scope of these people. You know, the Spanish revolutions all involved the Freemasons. They were very proud of the fact. They gave speeches at their grand lodges stating, you know, we have taken Spain. We now have so many people in authority. We have 5,000 members of the military in high positions. We have Spain. So, you know, they are there. They are across the world. They have spread everywhere. And they have huge political, commerce, religious, and legal clout. And, of course, one of the problems with that is that they are told in their degrees and their orders that they are ultimately to listen to the orders of the lodge and not the society for which they are part of.
Do you have a case where some lodges follow a noble aim, whereas others really just, you know, they're lured in by the dark side?
Well, you know, the dark side, the light side, these are all elements of the mind of man anyway. And whatever society we build is a reflection of the inner self. You know, we all have two sides. Some of us have many, many sides. And this is reflected in society, for instance, when you get the likes of Democrats and Republicans. Both claim that they want peace, both claim that they want a good nation, etc., etc., but have two opposing sides and viewpoints on how to get there. And we're all very much divided like that, as our psychologists tell us.
There's one caveat to that. Neither of them get where they say they're going.
Well, that's politicians for you, the world over.
What they say and what they do are two completely different things, worlds apart.
Yes, they are. They are kings at spin. So Freemasonry is very much the same because it's a reflection of the mind of man. It's a society of man. So they have deep psychological and spiritual yearnings. But the other side is politically and commercially hungry, or both evolutionary drives that we have that are within us. And even one Freemason himself said back in the 19th century that Freemasonry has these two elements. It has the politicians and it has the mystics. And it has to accept that. And both are drawn together and both can only live together, he claimed, via the ritual Freemasonry. That is the thing that brings them together. And it's understanding that unification between the mystical element of the mind of man and the drives to, you know, improve his own lot, to become the alpha male, to become the alpha society, all, you know, part of those societies. And they can get very, very complex. And when they get down, watered down to people like me and you, when we come into contact with them, it can appear sometimes quite frightening.
Well, yeah. But also this duality that you're talking about, you know, oh God, the devil made me do it kind of thing. You know, you see here, I mean, this is right out of Star Wars, you know, Luke, trust in the Force.
Well, yeah, one thing that man always wants to do is absolve himself of responsibility. So
absolutely.
Isn't it fantastic to be a member of a club where you can turn around and say, but it wasn't me, it was the Grandmaster made me do it. It's absolution of your own sins and not really accepting the fact of you are responsible for your own actions.
Well, you know, that's the one thing that we really want to talk about in this interview and the degree of spin that is going on, what we've been encountering, and we'll get to that later on in the interview. But
it's fascinating. You're telling me earlier, it's incredible, and you're doing well to survive that.
Well, you know, if you're studying it, you know, from an arm's length, it's fascinating. And when you're on the receiving end, it sucks.
It does. I agree.
You know, we've been on the receiving end with this. We've been following the South Pole Telescope since 2006. And early this year, there was disclosure starting with Nibiru Shock 2012 and then the Truth and Knowledge and some others that were coming out with these leaked images and highly credible. I mean, they're not Photoshop images, but what we found grew up around this was this disinformation industry of sorts. I mean, it was a very, very well-coordinated hit team running multiple YouTube identities such as Project Storm, Ask Hernet, Power Lies and Knowledge, and so forth. And, you know, the tactics are smearing anyone that's reporting it, confusing. I mean, classic disinformation tactics. I have an article I put up on our site that talks about disinformation tactics. And when you read it, then you look at this whole YouTube scenario, you go, wow, this was a disinformation wolf pack.
Would you like some advice from a man who used to lecture in propaganda and tell companies and even politicians how to react to this?
Oh, talk dirty to me, will you?
My advice to you is to play up the fact that you are being, that disinformation is coming your way. And the reason that I would play that up and the way that I would spin that would be this, that if somebody is trying to disinformation you, then you are onto something big. If the bigger the disinformation process, the bigger the truth that you've discovered.
Oh,
you play on that fact. You
well,
shout
and it
about
is. It is. I mean, we just opened up a can of worms, particularly with this Steve Wood CERN disclosures. That's when it really just mushroomed, just went apey. And we've been...
Somebody somewhere has something to hide, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And, you know, the whole thing about this Steve Wood and CERN situation, I mean, and I've got hours of recorded audio, 40, 50 different various emails between the antagonists, the imposters, the people that are making the threats, Steve Wood himself. I mean, this is not your, as Robin Williams would call it, a run-by fruiter. You know, I mean, I've been doing this stuff since 99. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. I just feel like I stepped into a hornet's nest.
Yeah.
And the result was, I mean, we were just being brutally attacked everywhere. Now, it's interesting. We're starting to see people that are out there seeing this and they're not buying it. And now they're attacking Project Storm and these other people that are part of this team. And I mean, this is, to give you an example, AskerNew and Project Storm, it's all one and the same. This AskerNew user identity was on the web for about a week or so, week to 10 days, dormant. Just 30-year-old female from the United States. That's it. That's all it said. Then all of a sudden, in a period of less than four hours, they post 240 or 250 videos to YouTube.
That's an incredible machine that can do that, isn't it?
Well, I can tell you, you know, I'm a YouTube director. There's no way I can put 250 videos up in 4 hours. You got to have a team of people slamming and hitting that into the system and hitting hard.
So what you have physical evidence there of massive disinformation.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, and the thing of it was is there were the couple of pearls that were in there. One was an attack. Most of it. 99.9% of it was, they just went out and grabbed all kinds of videos off of everybody's different sites. And then they took this poker site, put a billboard at the back of the video to go sell this poker site, which was completely ridiculous. It's a completely hidden site. It's got a one-year domain name registration that was just a few months ago, and it's sitting behind one of those services that, you know, withholds information on who put it up there. There's zero transparency on it. All it is just simply, you know, a little JavaScript someone could download from anywhere. And all 250 or so of these videos had this at the tail end. Well, buried in that 250 videos were two videos basically designed as attack videos. One video was attacking a leak that came out of the South Pole Telescope that we had documented in one of our analysis videos. Truth, Lies, and Knowledge, I believe, or something. Another one was an attack on Steve Woods at CERN. The interesting thing was that the Steve Woods original account had been stolen. A video was put up with a bogus imagery. Then this AskerNew account comes in with an attack on that. I didn't document that before. This is the first time I'm talking about it. I have that physical proof. I have those two videos. But this was something where they were burying this stuff.
Yeah, created a blind, yeah.
Created a blind, put it out there, and then wait for somebody to go snap on this stuff and then humiliate them.
Yeah, hopefully, hoping for a viral, kind of thing. Yeah, very clever, yeah.
Very, very clever. So, I mean, the disinformation campaign, And now when I go back, track all the emails, and you have the receive from IP addresses, which all trace back to UK.
And it wasn't me.
Okay, good. But, you know, it would make sense to me that it was coming out of the UK.
Mm.
It seems to be a hub of that kind of activity.
Yes.
It really is.
You have to be careful as to where it can escalate to. I mean, the fact is that you are definitely onto something they don't like, whoever they are, and finding out who they are would be my next thing that I would want to do. Is whatever I would do, I would track them down, and highlight the fact, because recently I went on radio because I was about to go to Berlin to do something very dangerous, and I explained on radio what it was I was going to do. And he says, "Well, why on earth are you saying that on radio?" I said, "Well, it's my insurance, because now everybody knows I'm going there." So it's kind of an insurance. So you have to be careful with certain things, because there are some extremely powerful people in the world who have a lot of reasons not to have certain things revealed. And mostly it's down to money or defense or, you know, some commercial secrets. And even religion, they have hidden things for an awful long time. You know, I mean, things like the Nag Hammadi texts were kept away from us for so long. They really detested the fact that people could read it who weren't Catholic.
Mm.
People like Jules Verne, for instance, just to bring him up, he was deeply involved with secret societies. Everybody around him was, from uncles down to brothers, and, you know, everybody was into his best friends. He travelled around, he wrote about them, he hid them in his stories. But he also destroyed all of his documents, and his accounts were all destroyed. Things that you are told to do when you are in secret societies. But he let slip in his stories things that he shouldn't have done. And then what happens? His favourite nephew comes along, a perfectly sane young man, and nobody has been able to understand this. He comes along one day with a pistol, warns his uncle that he's going to shoot him, and then shoots him. Now, this does not make sense. This is a man who has been gotten to. This is a man who has either been drugged or, you know, hypnotized or whatever, but manages to mutter those words, "I'm going to have to shoot you." His favorite uncle. And nobody's been able to understand that. But the power of these people is so much so that this one of the most famous men in the world, the most widely read man there is on the planet, managed to keep that out of the press everywhere. That's power. And that's, you know, that's the kind of political power that you can have when you are involved in these things. And so, you know, be very careful, because things still happen today. Russian Secret Service guy was poisoned in our country, in the UK. I think it was only last year or the year before. Nothing that the British Secret Service could do about it. The Russian Secret Service came over and basically killed him with radiation. The powerful things are afoot, and when we get too close, you have to judge with the level of disinformation that comes as to just how dangerous it is, that, you know, the things that you are discovering. And you have got some very, very, you know, a lot of disinformation coming your way from what you were telling me before the interview.
Yes, and so perhaps we're out of time on this segment. When we come back in the next segment, let's talk about them a little bit more. Do we want to go there?
We get it on radio, we get it in front of everybody, and it's known then. It's known.
Okay.
Other people know. This is the thing to do, is to make sure other people know that you are being attacked. That proves not only your case, but it's a slight defense and insurance.
Okay, well then, we'll come back in the next segment and buy a little more insurance. Earlier, I said that we'd take a look at what makes these disinformation operatives tick. And the first step in understanding that is the first rule of managing disinformation, and that is, you do not take it personally. The minute you take it personally, you get pulled down to their level, and that's when they put the grapple hooks in you and you're done for. Because to these people, you're just a job. You're an object. your number on a file folder, and that's about it. There's nothing personal here. And so they do things that are just unspeakably cruel and inhuman to other people who are just trying to do the right things. So what makes them tick in respect to their ability just to be so callous towards others, uncaring and remorseless? Well, on one hand, you could use an example of the Janjaweed in Africa that, you know, get on their camels and go right into a camp in Darfur and throw some poor young teenage girl down to the ground, rape her, cut off her breasts with a knife, and then slit her throat, and leave her as an example to terrify everyone else. This happens. But they don't operate like the Janjaweed. They're professionals. The Janjaweed are just simple murderers. However, they do share common goals, and that's important to note. Nonetheless, when I think about these disinformation operatives and the wolf packs that they work in, a different image comes to my mind. I remember an old acquaintance many years ago. It was a couple, Marjorie and Larry, and they were wonderful folks. I was part of their extended family, so to speak, and I'd occasionally go visit for a few days, and I always loved the visits because Larry and I could talk about technology, and we were great futurists together. And with Marjorie, her prized possession were her books. She just had shelves and shelves of them, and we would talk about literature and philosophy and art, and she really opened my mind to a whole new world because I was really born-again geek at that point. And she was just a radiant, joyful part of my life. She was a registered nurse, and her specialty was working in intensive care. And she helped people. She derived a great deal of satisfaction of bringing comfort to others. She was the kind of nurse that you sure would want to have taking care of you if you're in the hospital with something serious, I can tell you that. But after 15 years of working as a registered nurse, Marjorie was starting to feel the pains. Economically, and of course, you know, in the back and the feet and what have you. So she started looking for something else to do, and she became a paralegal specializing in personal injury claims. Marjorie's first job after she was certified was with a plaintiff's attorney, and she was helping people to get justice for the injuries done to them. And so she was still in a mode of helping others and receiving the joy and satisfaction of that. She was happy and excited about her new career. And she was good at it. She was real good at it. Good enough to get the attention of the largest law firm in town that was representing the insurance companies. This defense firm specializes in getting the insurance companies off the hook. And they made her a financial offer that just simply stunned her. She couldn't refuse it. She took the money. And the first assignment they gave her was to work on welding rods. And in a particular client that they had, the welding rods were directly attributable to black lung disease. As a registered nurse, Marjorie had helped these people with this awful, awful, deadly, debilitating problem. It's just a miserable, mean, mean way to die. And now there she was, with a computer and a database program designed just for her, and boxes and boxes of file folders of all of these people who were part of this class action suit against this welding rod manufacturer and its insurance company. Marjorie's specific goal was not to disprove the claims of these victims of these welding rods and the black lungs that they suffered, but rather was to find enough glitches, if you will, in their case that the defense attorneys she worked for could create enough reasonable doubt in the minds of jurors to swing them in their favor. And for this, she was well rewarded, and on came the sparklies and the cars and all the other trappings. But what I saw was that radiant joy that had been hers through service to others disappeared. And what was left was this burned-out, cynical shell of a woman deluding herself with material aspects and egotistical aspects, and yet knowing she had lost the real wealth in her life, the joy and the love that she had experienced through service to others. It wasn't long after that that we said our last goodbyes, and I have never spoken to her since. And so when I see the disinformation operatives and the organized attacks and what they're doing to people, I remember Marjorie. And I think of these operatives as people who, at some point in their lives, may have experienced the joy and love of God and of service to others in some remote, distant past. But now that was gone. And like Marjorie, they're just cynical, burnt-out embers of people so far disconnected from Creator that they are truly lost. Do I pity them? No, because God brings us into this life so that we can make choices and learn from those choices. If we choose well, great. And if we choose unwisely, well, you had your right to choose. But the point here about disinformation operatives is that what they're attacking is not you. They are attacking that very right to make choices as given to you by your Creator. Now let's get back into it with Phil. Back with Phil, and Phil, before I get a little further into this SPT disclosure firestorm that's brewing, or hornet's nest, however you want to look at it, and just to briefly tell the listeners out there that back in 2006, we broke the story on the South Pole Telescope as being the perfect instrument to observe Planet X in the infrared ranges coming in from the south. Now, there's all kinds of noise and flack, and that's not what it's supposed to do. And there have been serious disclosure leaks that are coming out of there. Of course, if the South Pole Telescope is, as they maintain, purely civilian project, then, you know, they would just laugh this off and not even care to respond to it. The question is though, all of a sudden, there's this massive, well-coordinated disinformation attack on anyone who's picking up and reporting the leak videos that are coming from people who are representing themselves as working there. And they're not Americans. It's an American-run telescope. These are foreign nationals that are trying to get the information out. And that's caused the firestorm. And because the fact is right now, and this is pointed out in the video that we feel is really credible, all the disinformation attacks against it really have just painted for us an inescapable conclusion that it's the genuine thing. It's showing that we're not going to see this object in the northern hemisphere really until, you know, sometime in 2010.
I have just a question about that.
Sure.
When 2010 comes, and this is personal, but when 2010 comes and let's say it doesn't appear, what are you going to do?
Yippee-ti-yay. I'm going to get pie-eyed drunk. Three sheets of the wind, baby. I'm going to get me a case of Maker's Mark and a case of Cuban cigars. I am going to go party my butt off. That's what I'll do.
I think I might join you.
Hey, absolutely. You know, party time, party time. Then we can go do something totally material like day trading. I don't know. But
yuck.
Yeah, you know, yuck, you know, but I mean, it's like you ought to read my email sometimes. It does make me want to day trading or go in the toilet paper business. Toilet paper, think about it, you know, one ply, two ply, that's pretty simple. Every flush is a winner, just keep it soft, you know.
For all those people that talk out of the books, yeah.
Yeah, so, but for me, this whole situation that we're going through with this SBT and then all of the flack around it, which seemed to subside once we just announced that we're not doing any more disclosure videos. The flak seemed to subside. But, you know, the thing that was really most disappointing for me was that it wasn't the disinformation attacks. You know, you can slug through that to a certain point. It was the fact that there were just so many people out there that were attacking us.
Yeah.
Just because they didn't want to hear this information. And so...
Yeah. Fear.
They really do. You know, it's God must love stupid people. He made so many of them. And So we draw them like, you know, magnets. And it seems the general feeling I had of the whole process is anybody that is trying to do what we're taught to do in the West, which is to have a rational approach to finding the truth, where we build one factoid link at a time until we finally arrive at the other end of the chain, ergo the truth.
Yeah.
And we try and get there without breaking the chain, or to find extra links or parallel links to the train, anything that keeps us chained and going forward towards the truth. And it seems like all of these people in disinformation, they're just running around with these big bolt cutters. You know?
Well, you know, if people like Henry Ford had listened to them, or the Wright brothers, or, you know, Kennedy with the space race, etc., had listened to the naysayers, nothing, we would never have progressed in the world. It's the people that look at things in a different angle, you know, that actually discover new things and open things up for the rest of us, even if that includes giving us a warning shot. You know, if scientists hadn't thought, well, maybe the Earth's warming up or whatever, we wouldn't have the warning shots that we've got now about global warming. And so we need, even if in 2010 nothing happens, the act of what you're doing is admirable, because it's philosophy, it's the love of wisdom, and that means, you know, the love of knowledge and information and understanding who we are and where we are and what's happening around us, etc. So, you know, it's admirable what you're doing, and I don't see why the naysayers, who are the ones who are sitting there with no imagination whatsoever, no forethought, no, you know, grasping of that human element of imagination that we, you know, that makes us special. They're doing nothing but applying negatives to everything. And so, you know, people like us have to always try to remain positive and put a positive spin on things, because, you know, we've got to keep going and got to keep doing what we're doing. And I think, you know, more strength to your elbow for what you're doing.
Well, thank you. You know what they say in over here in the States about pioneers?
No.
Well, you generally tend to find them laying face down in the dirt with a back full of arrows.
Then again, there's always people like Daniel Boone. A famous Freemason, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy. They really do get around. You know, it's just...
Oh, they do.
Your DVD really showed me with Jules Verne how there's this... You know, two edges to it. It's like a, gosh, almost like a pair of scissors.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the end of the day, I've given and I do give lectures at Freemason lodges.
Mm-hmm.
And that surprises so many people. And people accuse me of being a Freemason. I've had accusations of being a disinformation agent for, you know, God knows who. And it's just not. I am a lover of wisdom. H.G. Wells said, you know, and this is the man who coined the term, the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
H.G. Wells said that we no longer teach our children philosophy. We teach them when the philosopher lived, who he was, where he lived, what he had for breakfast, but we don't teach them what he thought and what he said. You know, it's akin to giving a nurse some medicines and saying where they were made, and who by and when, but not telling her what it's for. So, and I don't think much has changed from when H.G. Wells said that. I think it's actually getting worse because of the dross that we are feeding children on television and feeding ourselves. We're creating dumb people at the end of the day, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, but you are what you eat, whether it's physically or emotionally or mentally. You end up being what you eat, and any marketing analysis, such as myself, knows that you can influence masses via things such as the television. And what are we influencing them with? Big Brother? You know, where are we teaching the wisdom? And we need people like yourselves and lots of other people that there are that are alive on the internet and in DVDs and books to keep it alive, because all we're getting is we're basically burning Alexandria all over again, as far as I can see. And these disinformation people are no better than people with torches ready to set fire.
Yeah, you know, and when you're talking about how they hang reputations with it, I mean, this is the most innovative and clever disinformation attack on me I've ever seen yet.
Mm.
The number one attack that they've been using for a long time is he sells books. Now, oh my God, somebody stated the obvious, you know. He sells books, you know. It's, okay, fine, how do you pay your bills?
It's a classic way of you know, finding the motive and making your motive appear to be a bad thing. It's
right.
Just classic disinformation stuff.
Right.
Next, they'll turn around, you know, I am sure they've already attacked associates that you have. Anybody who comes anywhere near you will get emails from people, you know, so.
Oh, yeah,
those people,
that.
Then that frightens people around you. You start to lose, you know, support and you crumble. I mean, I had an interview recently with Nick Pope, who used to work for the Ministry of Defence in Great Britain, and he admitted to the fact that the ministry, everybody knew within the ministry, used disinformation and used dumbing down techniques. They would slip into their statements things like little green men. There are no little green men, just to make ufologists appear stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the kind of thing you're going to get. You know, they'll come out with things like, oh, the planet X is, you know, that kind of thing.
I got to tell you what the latest one is. It's really good.
Yeah.
They're saying Planet X is a scare hoax being foisted by the New World Order, and that I am a New World Order operative because I'm publishing a book on the scare hoax.
So you're the disinformation person.
That's right. So now I'm the disinformation person, you know. And I'm going, okay, well, there's no checks in the mail. What's, you know, what are we missing here, fellas? So that's the latest one. And what amazes me is not that they would say it, it's just that they'd say it knowing that there's so many people out there that just suck it up.
Mm.
They'll just, because they're looking for some kind of pretext to not want to look at something.
Yeah.
You know, that it's what they have working for them is cognitive dissonance. If it's not inside your belief systems, it's not there. You're going to reject it. Or, you know, in a simple way of looking at it, cognitive dissonance says if it's outside the blinders, it stays outside the blinders.
You know me full well. I mean, you know that I have no idea about Planet X. I am nowhere near as knowledgeable as you on any of that stuff. And as far as I am concerned, if there is some truth to this, then it needs researching. And it's just as well that there are people that are like you doing this. You know, Albert Einstein didn't grow up as a scientist. It was a clerk.
Mm-hmm.
If this is so many of the great and major discoveries that we have in the world are by people that were ordinary people but thought outside of the box, that used that extremely powerful thing that we have inside our brain known as imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And these people that you're talking about have got no imagination whatsoever.
No.
They follow a textbook method of disinformation, and it's And like you say, they're kind of the Randys of the world. They just want to diss everybody because that makes them feel better. They're very negative people. They're probably even slightly psychotic, a lot of them. And they're probably the type of people that are very prone to doing things like stalking. And when they're faced with that kind of, you know, approach, what answers do they have? They just simply attack you back again. And if you engage them, you're just asking for it. So just don't even engage them and just say, we're obviously onto something because we're being attacked. Positive spin to it, you know.
Well, I think it is. And the thing that I'm onto, I mean, I just kind of think out loud here. Let me give it to you this way. There's in Georgia, there's a stone that was put up with 8 different languages. And one of the things on that stone says that the population of the earth has to be reduced to 500 million. We're talking of 85% reduction. Let's be frank. As a species, we are consuming the biosphere like locusts.
Yeah, agreed. We're a virus.
We're a virus. We are not sustainable.
No.
All right, we're like pigs. You know, we're making filth in our own pen. We're not good mentors of our planet. And on top of that, we're going to weaponize space. I mean, we have our priorities all wacko here.
Do you know, I was asked recently by a science fiction magazine to say what I thought was the worst disaster that ever hit the planet. And I said, it's quite simple. It's when an ape decided to walk upright.
Yeah. And there was the second disaster, too, you know, when another ape winked at that ape and said, "Hey, you sailor, you know, want a good time?
Can I have my rib back, please?"
Oh, yeah, can I have my rib back? There you go. Yeah, I agree with that. But on the other hand, I have basic faith in our species. I feel that we're in an evolutionary event, and that there are those that really want to inhibit us from evolving. And as a species, if you want to put it in a certain way, you can have someone there. In UK, there was the guy, Pol Pot, the opera singer, the one that went on the national contest and sang that aria. And next thing you know, his CDs are all over Amazon, right? He just really took off. This guy loved his singing. Well, there are people that would say, well, I don't want to see him succeed. So that they would try and convince him that he couldn't sing his way out of a bathtub.
Yeah.
And the guy never would show up on the show, and he would never take off and start a career. It's a classic thing that you see in the workplace. You know, you'll see someone on a work team, and they're really talented. They're going to be a rising star. And if they're fortunate, they've got a manager above them that sees that and says, hey, I'm going to hitch my wagon to this star and encourage that. But most managers won't. They'll try and get rid of that person or humiliate them or suppress them or stop their evolution, their rise up through the ranks, because they're jerks and they know they're jerks and they don't want someone rising up from beneath them, above them, that knows that they're a jerk.
Yeah, threatening their alpha dominance, yeah.
Right, it's an alpha dominance thing. Now, getting back to the fact that, you know, here we are, we've overpopulated the planet, and what I see is this Machiavellian thing that is, all right, we have Planet X that's going to come in. It'll do the dirty work for us. We don't have to take the blame. We just say, look up, you know, there. That thing is what's killing everybody. But what will happen is that because we kept everyone stupid about it, they're going to die in great numbers. And we're going to, at the end of it, we're going to have a much smaller population, much easier for us to control and manage. So guys like myself that are out there doing the research, there are other great researchers out there doing this work. It's not that we're going to be able to save the people. It's that we're the ones that are going to be witness to what they're doing.
Yeah.
And wow, this interview's really flying along, so we're going to have to pick up on the third segment. When we do, when we come back, let's talk about bearing witness and how these secret societies really resent it.
Okay.
Should I say what I'm thinking now? Should I?
At the last break, we took a look at what makes these information disoperatives tick. Now let's take a look at what they do. And the good news is, there's no great mystery to what they do. You see, these people are really not all that clever or inventive. They're not the folks that wind up running companies. No, they're the people that usually find their glass ceilings in life long before the rest of us find ours. And whatever cleverness they appear to have is really just a toolkit that's given to them by their dark masters. And it has a playbook. I call it the Disinformation Playbook, and a gentleman by the name of H. Michael Sweeney published a couple of articles in June 2001 that just lays them right out. And you know, the amazing thing is that what he saw happening in 2001 is just happening again today. So this playbook is just used again and again and again. Their attack methods are repetitious. So when you're finished listening to these two interviews, the next thing you need to do is click on the link, it's here on the page, to the Disinformation Playbook. Read both parts of that. The first part are the 25 ways to suppress truth. When we read this, it was just amazing. We're going click, 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 click. They did that. Oh, they did that. They did that. They did it. It just opened our eyes in ways we could have never imagined. And then part two of the Disinformation Playbook are the 8 traits of a disinformationalist. Wow, now this is good stuff. This is like going to a judo or karate class and you're a little 100-pound squirt and the instructor says, here's how you take down somebody twice your size. A little bit of leverage and a little bit of moves. And when you read these two articles together by Sweeney, woo, you'll know the leverage, you'll know the moves. And one important thing I can't stress hard enough is that when you're out there tangling with these folks, never, never, never take it personally. You are an object to them, and they are an object to you. So as they say, don't get mad, don't get even, just get your way. And here's the fun part. If you do it this way, they can't get under your skin, but you'll get under their skin. Not because they are mad or angry or fearful of you. But remember, the name of the game is, we're all objects. Well, they're objects too. They are resources to their dark masters. And when you prevent them from doing their jobs, then what happens is their fears of not pleasing their own dark masters begin to haunt them. Now let's get back into it with Phil.
Oh, give me something to hold on to as a venture into the great beyond. And if you gotta say anything at all, let it be something true and beautiful.
Well, Phil, back in the third segment, and this interview is moving pretty fast. And I got to ask you the question, is this getting a little on the dark side for you?
This is normal life for me.
Normal life?
Normal life. This is everyday life.
This is a picnic at the beach?
It's normal. This is easy. You know, I mean, my life's spent, you know, researching secret societies and trying to see things in different angles and to get out of people what the truth is, because people do like to hide things, even if it's just a method of control or power that they think they've got. You know, it's alpha dominance all again, just to keep a bit of a secret.
Mm-hmm.
That's my life, and sometimes some of the things that you push for aren't necessarily that small. Sometimes they're a little bit large. See, you know, there's some large secrets in there, and they don't always want you to be revealing them. You know, when I was in Berlin, chasing down a secret society that I believed still existed, and actually found them and ended up in the hornet's nest with them,
mm-hmm.
Surrounded by pictures of Hitler and Goebbels and
all the
rest of them.
Yeah, we talked about that in the last interview, last time you were on. That was quite an event.
That's the kind of thing that makes you think twice, you know, and I've just finished a film that will be out later this year called Angels, Demons and Freemasons, and I know I am going to get so much flack, because in that I'm saying some things that have just never been said before and some links that people just never made. And it opens up a whole hornet's nest, to say the least. So I'm kind of biting my nails on that one and thinking, should I take my name off it and put somebody else's on? I'll put David Icke's name on the front, I think.
You're the third coming of Jesus then, right?
Well, you know, my problem with David Icke, bless his little cotton socks, is that he tells us all about all the deceit and disinformation and the nasty things the New World Order is doing to us, now the Queen can shapeshift into a reptile, but then replaces all that with himself as the Messiah and just completely, you know, does the exact same thing that everybody else has, that he's been slagging them off for. Yeah, these people put themselves up as the Messiah, these people, and then he doesn't does it for himself. I'm the man with the answers. I am the Messiah. Sits there on radio and says that God spoke to him. It's, you know, I can honestly say, hand on heart, God's not spoken to me. So, you know, neither have any aliens from any other planets or anything like that. It's just damned hard work with lots of paperwork.
I think he once left me a voicemail.
You are blessed. Was it a 7-hour one? Like reflections.
No, something like, pick up the phone, stupid. But,
Oh, don't you wish you were in at the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's always been the case. You know, I'm always out of the house when dialing for dollars calls. But
you have to be careful. I mean, disinformation can be so incredibly clever. I, you know, I was saying when you interviewed Nick Pope about the ufology and aliens, mm-hmm. and you know, and I don't believe in aliens, neither do I disbelieve. I'm not bothered either way. I think it'd be fascinating if we found some, but there you go. But when I was interviewing him, the disinformation that these guys put out is incredible, even to the point of they are more than happy, and I mean that, for people to believe in aliens and for people to look up to the skies and see those wonderful ships with those lights doing incredible things, and to believe that they are alien ships. Not because of the black technology that they've got themselves, but because it's not always them, because it's sometimes the enemy. And they do not want people to believe that our wonderful government and those that are there to protect us don't know what the hell is going off in the skies and don't know about those Russians that are flying all over it, taking the, you know, Michael out of us.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I find, highly believable. So they are more than happy to have the X-Files go out there and for people to look to the skies and see every little blip as an alien ship. When all along they know that a large percentage of those are the Chinese or the Russians or, you know, or they don't even know. And that is itself frightening. They should know exactly what's in their airspace and there would be questions asked and, you know, people's heads would roll. So that I can understand. They're quite happy for us to believe in aliens in that respect. That doesn't mean that there aren't aliens. I have no idea.
Yeah, there's just a lot of disinformation out there, and what I find sad is the way that they have to do it, that they destroy lives.
They do, because people spend their entire lives searching for something which may in fact be just purely based on disinformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's no different to religion, is it, in that respect? You know, you guys listen to me, this man walked on water 2,000 years ago. Oh, but you can't believe in ghosts. You know, well, make your mind up. Are things strange? Do strange things happen or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're telling me that a man can get off of a cross dead, go into a tomb and get up again 3 days later, but it's silly to believe in aliens and ghosts. So, you know, but people spend their entire lives believing in that real men did these things and walked on water when there are real good reasons for those statements in the Bible, real good logical, straightforward reasons for the things that are stated.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't need to know those, because it's much better to convince us of this belief system, especially if it's an experiential one, because that's deep, runs deep psychologically, and that's fantastic for control. You cannot get a better control than an experiential or belief-led system. And you know, at the end of the day, ghosts, the paranormal, ufology, can be experiential-led belief systems. But the problem often is that they don't have moral guidance like a lot of the religions do. And so you get infighting, backstabbing, you know, you get the nasty emails, you get the disinformation coming from all sides, you get all that breakup that occurs. Because the lack of moral guidance that's often not there, a lack of philosophy, the lack of love of wisdom, the lack of understanding that other people have different inputs. And I'm open and happy to listen to anybody's input on anything, you know, more than happy to, because, you know, I'm only one brain, and many brains are more powerful.
Oh, I agree. And I'd like to tap your brain here for a theoretical analysis. You know, back before you asked me if nothing shows up in 2010.
Mm.
I told you, I said, yeah, I'd be glad to get drunk. I surely would. But on the other hand, let's flip the equation around.
Mm.
Let's say that it does show up.
Yeah.
All right. Now, we have a population that is literally being dumbed down.
Without doubt, yeah.
We're more interested, by and large, as to who we're going to text our votes for on American Idol.
Yeah, Britney Spears haircut, you name it, yeah.
That's right, then on the world around us. And
yeah,
there's a lot of annoyance. In other words, you know, do I have to choose between the Arctic melting or a game show? Well, I'll take the game show, right?
Yeah.
If in fact, what's really happening is that there's an intentional dumbing down, because if people are not intellectually or emotionally or spiritually prepared for what's going to happen, first thing they're going to do is just simply be dumbstruck by what's happening.
Yeah.
A great way to express it is say, you know, take Microsoft Vista, all right, and go run it on one of the computers that was back in 1995 that was running on Windows 95.
No thanks.
I mean, that computer wouldn't even be able to load it. Well, the same thing, if you're not prepared, if you don't have the neural networks, you know, in your brain that are there working on this stuff, you can't process it, you're overwhelmed, and at which point you're completely malleable. And yeah. What I see the biggest danger coming up is that it's not the conclusion that's the important thing that we're stressing in our work. It is the process, because the process is what hardwires your brain for survival. If you're thinking about tsunamis, super volcanoes, and these are very real possibilities, whether it's a Planet X or not, but if you're thinking about these things, what you're doing is your brain is sitting there creating neural networks to support the visualizations that you're doing.
Yes.
And so when these events do happen, you go, aha, been there, done that.
Yes.
Meanwhile, everyone else around you is going, who'd have thunk it? What's that? You know?
Yeah.
Okay, what do we do? The classic answer, wait for the government. The water trucks are on the way.
Absolutely. Fall back on a belief system. And that's belief in the government, yeah.
And so if you're looking at a massive eradication of, and this is pure eugenics, you want to reduce a huge amount of the world population. If they're just stupid, when it comes time to cull the herd and the scythe is going through the field, they're the ones that are going to be standing up going, gee, what's that whooshing noise? Okay?
Yeah, totally.
And so I see this tremendous suppression of understanding, not so that these people can continue collecting their resources and building their underground bunkers and anything else that they want to do in their little power games. To me, this whole thing I've gone through with this Project Storm and these SPT disclosure videos, it tells me that they just want everyone to be stupid as possible so that there's the greatest eugenics impact, the most significant reduction of life on the globe. And then after which they're king of the hill with 500 million people, very easy to manage, thank you.
Yeah.
And they're off
the hook. I don't think what you're saying is without precedence. I think that it's, you know, it's something that historians can prove has happened before.
Yeah.
You know?
So the
not necessarily on as big a scale as you're saying, but you know, it's certainly happened that we've marched into war and crusade, etc., without the knowledge of what it was that we were walking into. If you stand there and tell, you know, 3 million British soldiers that when they walk to France they're going to be sitting in a dirty, muddy hole full of feces and you're going to get blown to little bits, I don't think they'd have got 3 million men to march over there. So it certainly is the thing to do, is to keep your flock of sheep chewing the cud.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's easier to get them into the slaughterhouse that way.
Well, you know, people have asked me before, it's quite simple, if you were in charge of the world, and I'll ask you, if you were in charge of the world, if you were Blofeld sat in a big steel room with your little white cat, and you had to do something about this, what would you do?
Well, first off, I'd have a much better look at Mini-Me, but...
oh, it's a serious answer with you, isn't
cheap
it?
Cheap shot, okay. Let me get back on topic. Fair question.
It's a difficult question, I know.
Well, it's a difficult question, but it's not a difficult answer. You know, we had a fellow on that was talking about what would the Founding Fathers do? And the Founding Fathers were Freemasons.
Yep.
They would have looked at this and said, you know, we need to prepare people for it.
Mm.
And so there would have been, back in whenever they discovered this object, whether it was in the 70s or the 80s or, you know, who knows when, but there would have been this effort to start educating, raising consciousness, and that by this time, if the Founding Fathers of the United States were still running the country, we would know about this and we would be, as a country, working to deal with it. With them, leadership really came in the noble side of the secret societies, which is to help mankind become better than it is.
Yes. Yeah.
And they would have taken the noble path because that was consistent with what they did when they built this country.
I agree with what you're saying, you know, to the degree, but, you know, there are also other sides to this, is that this noble cause that we're talking about can very easily be twisted into eugenics, into war, into revolution, because it's for the right and the good of the whole. And they have stated this again and again. I've got lists of of statements and lectures and speeches given by Freemasons from across, right back to the 18th century, where they have stated again and again, we are doing this war, you know, we're going to war, we know that we are going to have thousands killed, but it's for the greater good of this new Jerusalem that we will create. And so that kind of, you know, thing can be a little terrifying. You know, Hitler convinced the German people, who are a good people, no different to anybody else, but he convinced them that it was okay to do the things that they did for the good of the whole, for Germany. And, you know, so, you know, one would have to wonder if the Founding Fathers were alive today and under the same influences that the people are under today, and the you know, the constraints and the pressures and the global warming and the lack of oil and the food crisis and the credit crunch, et cetera, et cetera, what would they really do? I don't really know. I mean, the question is still, so you're really getting around to saying that you would tell the people, because that's what you're doing.
I don't see that, frankly, telling the people makes that big a difference. I mean, let me be frank.
Yeah.
If we looked at the number of people that are aware of this topic and actively studying it on a constructive basis.
Yeah, I hear you.
This would be a subatomic grain of sand on the butt of a flea, on the butt of a dog, on the butt of an elephant.
You do have a way with words, yes.
Thank
absolutely.
You. And so we're really just really, really insignificant. I don't see us.
But if you could get on primetime television, if instead of Big Brother coming on, you do have Big Brother there, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, instead of Big Brother coming on and the whole world watching people sleep, would you go on there and tell the whole nation?
Of course, you know, but am I waiting for Oprah to call? No. You know. Yeah, I'm not sitting by the phone. I think dialing for dollars is going to get me before Oprah does. But realistically, and even then, okay, I see there's a wider information role when this knowledge comes out. And Planet X researchers, I mean, we discuss this amongst ourselves. And right now I can tell you that I've quit. I mean, I'm doing my own interviews here with Cut to the Chase, but I have quit giving interviews on other shows.
Right. Yeah.
And the reason is it's psychic vampirism. And it might sound odd to my listeners out there, but I'll go out and I'll do a show. And people, this is like a rattlesnake topic. It hits deep human ingrams. Human ingrams. We have deep memories as a species of what this object does. And you know, I can tell you, hey, I believe in the great flabaz. If you don't accept the great flabaz, you'll die in the valley of Gugu. You know, and you'll look at me and go, hey, you know, there's medicine for that. Try Betty Ford. But if I tell you, you know, there's this object in a 3,600-year orbit, when it comes through, we have tsunamis, volcanic eruptions, impact events, polar shifts, and other such things, and it's imminent, then you're going to respond to me like I threw a rattlesnake in your face.
So you're not up into the Nevada desert building yourself a big boat, then?
No.
You're not doing an hour on this.
No, you know, I mean, my message really is listen to your inner guides. Everybody has to find their own way. And the most important thing is it's what's between your head and about 30 pounds of gear on your back. And if you're going to survive this thing, you got to be willing to walk the earth.
Well, you know, there's a man called Crichton Miller. I don't know if you've heard of him. And he's managed to work out what the original Celtic cross was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating thing that you have got to get on your show. He's proven beyond all doubt, so much so that he's managed to have official patents on the Celtic cross, would you believe?
Woo.
To show that the Celtic cross was in ancient times used for navigation. And he has pointed out again and again to me that come the great solar flares or whatever comes, and we have, and our compasses don't work, and none of the electrical devices work, and none of us have got a clue which way to go or what to do, that a simple cross and a circle can help you navigate to within a 3-mile radius anywhere on the planet. Whether you are in a boat, what time, it doesn't matter, whether it's day or night, you can use this device. It's incredible. And, you know, he gets the same thing. He is frustrated because, again, so few people know about this thing. And yet this is a practical answer to things that you're saying. You know, you need that 30 pounds of kit on your back, but you also need to know how to get from one place to another.
That's right.
And you'll need to know how to start to build and use angles and all these kind of things. And this device does that. And we've often discussed, you know, we need to almost mass market these things, mass make them in plastic for people,
mm-hmm.
and teach school kids how to use them. I've just been given my own television show, mm-hmm. my own chat show in the UK, and he's the first man on, and I want him on every show to show tell people how to use this thing. Because if there's a nuclear disaster and it screws up, you know, the magnetic readings, if the solar flares, if Planet X comes, whatever happens, man needs this tool again like he needed it before, because it goes right back to ancient Egypt.
Well, I would love to have this fellow on, and, you know, I see a definite need for it. I mean, right now, the Earth's magnetic field is getting ready for a flip. It's already starting in the South Atlantic, where there's the polarity flips.
Yeah, it keeps appearing in different places, doesn't it? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Plus, it's just going to come on more and more. So, I mean, I definitely would love to have this fellow on. And
well, he's known about this for over 10 years, and he's lectured at Oxford University and been completely thrown out. You know, they just laugh at him because he's not a professor. He is yet again, you know, he's an Einstein clerk. The guy left school when he was about 10 years old because of family issues, etc. But he's a multimillionaire with a great big company. And Oxford University won't listen, even though the British patent officers have given him 2 patents on the thing because it works. He's passed every degree in navigation there is going. And, you know, he can get you anywhere with this thing. You don't need a compass. You don't need anything. It's an incredible device. And I have personally, you know, I kind of have a bit of a crusade for the guy, a crusade across, you know, because this is an incredible discovery that's real and physical and provable historically. And, you know, I love that kind of thing. And not only that, it is of real value to the world.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, I want to get on to this thing because I'll tell you, the way I see our mission here is that we're really talking to a very, very small audience of people. Relatively speaking, I'm just talking to the ones that are going to get through it. Now, unfortunately, I have to say that what I do see is this great eugenics die-off, where a lot of people are going to die because they were bred to be stupid, like cattle.
I'm afraid so, yeah.
Yeah, it's you see it, and that's just the way it is, and if you try and help them, then they're programmed to blow up at you.
I personally, you know, my take on this is that it's a very mathematical equation kind of take. I see everything in ratios, mm-hmm. numbers. It's a very strange way of seeing things, but it's the energy of creation and evolution, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that we are getting to a pinnacle point. And you know, I've often said to my wife, she's a virologist, mm-hmm. to viruses, what is it that's going to come along, that's going to, you know, cut down the numbers again, because it needs to, because the number, the ratio of the whole thing is that we are pushed too far. A little bit like, you know, going too far into the Amazon, suddenly this strange disease comes out at us, you know, whether it's Ebola or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
it fights back. And man is, you know, often, although we are conscious and supposedly clever, we are stupid too, and we just don't get this yet. And so nature is going to have to sort us out with its ratios.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe it is Planet X that's going to come along and do this. You know, there's just a different angle on that. That my perspective on this is that something will wipe us out, whether it's a virus or seriously deplete our numbers again. And I think that this precedent's in history. Civilizations have been wiped off the planet several times.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's again and again, we have this pattern of civilizations rising up quickly, slow declining atrophy, they crumble from within, and then some kind of cataclysmic event hits the underpins and they collapse upon themselves.
Yeah, yeah. It's very profound, isn't it?
It is. It is this constant pattern, and the only thing that's going to break that pattern, humanity has been doing this again and again and again and again and again. And the reason why is that we're looking for these negative things. We want leverage. It's greed. It's all of the motives of exploitation. I think what will happen is that we'll break this pattern when we have one generation that stands up and says, the most important thing in life is not screwing the other guy for a buck. The most important thing in life is being in oneness, in peace with yourself and all that is with around you. And if oneness is your currency of life, then we break the pattern. And then fabulous things are available to us. And, you know, I'm holding out the hope that that's exactly what's going to happen. That the people that I'm trying to get this information to help, are going to be part of that generation that are going to break this miserable, painful pattern of life that has gone on and on and on, and finally it stops with them.
Yeah, it's time to jump off the hamster's wheel.
Absolutely, absolutely. Philip, we actually went over, but I'm just loving this thing, so we've got to come back to this again.
Anytime, my friend.
Okay, well, when are you going to get that new book up?
The new film, you mean?
New film.
The new film, The Angels, Demons, and Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
That will be out just at the end of summer, I believe. But before that, I've got several other things coming out anyway. So I've got there's a Bram Stoker film about to come out, which is a vampire, about the dark nature of man. And, I'm still doing promotions for the Bond Code book about Ian Fleming and his secret society links. And amazingly, a Bigfoot hunt that we did in Kentucky. You know, everybody's got to have a bit of fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed that.
All right. You are a prolific fellow, that's for sure. And you have your fun.
Oh, yeah.
We have done that today, too. Phil? Sorry, I'm out of time. But we're going to come back again. So thanks for being on.
Anytime, my friend. You just shout. My hand, I won't turn away. Life's too short to play these games. I want you to love me just the way I am.
As we close out this interview with Phil, I want to take a look ahead at the second part of this series, which is our interview with Marshall Van Summers. He's the gentleman who's out there doing the Allies of Humanity. Literally, he's channeling information from another race of beings. They're far, far away from us, but they are observing what is happening on the Earth. And they're trying to send us an urgent message. Now, up front, I want to say that our rule at Yowza.com when dealing with subjective sciences such as channeling is that no one single voice is authoritative. That does not mean we throw the message away. In fact, the exact opposite is true. The message is all that we look at, and what we're looking for are statistically relevant patterns between this information and other information, and we're also looking to see if the message itself has a sound internal logic. Truth does ring true. And I have to tell you, I've spent a lot of time researching various different materials on the Allies of Humanity, a lot of YouTube videos, hours and hours on it. And I did it because what I was seeing is an outside view of disinformation that was really giving me a powerful perspective as to what's happening at the terrestrial level, if you will. And despite the many hours I've spent looking at this information and listening to it, I've yet to find conflicts in its internal logic. That is not to say that I am stipulating they actually, in fact, exist. I can't do that. There's no way for me to have a three-way channel, if you will, with Marshall and the Allies. But what I did learn in my research about them is very interesting, because I was really wanting to find out what's their motive for doing this. Well, in order to understand that, imagine you've lost someone that you love very much in a tragic airplane accident. Now, the first thing you want to do, as other people in your situation have done and will always do, is you want to know why, because you want to have something significant in this loss. If you can find out some kind of pilot error, or there was a defect in the manufacturing of the aircraft, or there was improper maintenance, whatever it is, find the cause, and no one else has to suffer from this kind of failure again, then you do have significance for the suffering you have felt. This is a very noble and enlightened purpose. This brings us to the Allies of Humanity, a species that is trying to help us without becoming directly involved, because they believe that by becoming directly involved, we would then become dependent on them for technology and guidance and lose our own sense of self-direction. What they're telling us is that when they were introduced to the greater community of species in the galaxy, they were much like ourselves. Divided, contentious, and warlike, they, like us, were also squandering the resources of their planet. Consequently, they were easily enslaved by another race, and it subsequently took them many generations to free themselves from the yoke of that slavery. With the memory of that terrible suffering well ingrained into their consciousness, they're reaching out to other emerging races like us to warn us so that we do not have to suffer the same fate. Regardless of whether or not you are prepared to accept the notion that the allies of humanity do exist and that they are trying to help us, what I can tell you is that the message, when separated from the source, has a consistent internal logic, and within that internal logic, there is great wisdom that we can apply to countering disinformation as we see it today. So join me now for part two of Terrestrial and Extraterrestrial Disinformation with propaganda expert and author Marshall Van Summers.